Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Some have called the conflict in Ukraine a war of attrition. Others claim Russia is pursuing its own strategy on its own timetable. However, there is ample evidence the Kiev regime is losing, and badly. And this is why this stage of the conflict is so dangerous. Crosstalking the conflict in Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Brian Berletic, in Bangkok. He is a geopolitical analyst and a former U.S. Marine. And in London, we have Andriel Cantante. He is the founder of AK Consulting and a foreign affairs analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Brian, let me go to you first before we talk about this critical stage in the conflict in Ukraine. I couldn't help but notice the Washington Post is saying that European officials really want to avoid talking about Nord Stream. Too. I mean, this is a situation that is not going to go away. The legacy media, the corporate media can ignore it all it wants, but a lot of people are still very interested. Actually, the insurers in Germany have to, by law, they have to ask questions what happened to their asset. This is not a story that's going to go away, and the more they invent sidebar stories, the more hilarious and ridiculous that they actually are. Go ahead, Brian.
I think it's a contributing factor to the overall deterioration of the West and its stature on the global stage. There was this massive attack, a terrorist attack, on a major infrastructure project, and nobody's interested in who did it, which tells you actually everything you know about, need to know about who actually did it. And then the fabrication of these stories that are so absurd. They're dismantled in 5 minutes, and then they come back with a revised edition. It's absurd to the point of amusement until you realize how much power and wealth these people still have in their hands and how dangerous it is to have people with this mindset behaving in this matter.
You know, Andrea, you know, it almost this alternative story about these rogue Ukrainian elements, possibly Russians working with them. They can't let that go. They just can't let that go. But it sounds like the SS Minnow. It's Gilligan's Island. I mean, that's the level of parody they've gotten themselves to. Go ahead, in London.
Well, that's true. But I think that this shows how the West thinks that people can, keep on going with not asking questions, or how the corporate media can somehow kick the problem along the grass without giving the answers to the legitimate questions. I mean, if the Russia would have been a perpetrator of this terrorist attack on its own infrastructure, I'm pretty sure that the news cycles in the Western media would remind us every single second about this fact that the investigation has to be conducted. But nevertheless, if the a legitimate call to discuss this at the UN Security Council forum is being raised by Russia or other countries like China, somehow the US led camp is burying the topic under the ground, and it's not willing to move forward. So to any thinking person, the answer is very clear. And I think that although it's highly unlikely that the perpetrators will be brought to justice after conducting this terrorist attack, I think that this will have a long-lasting repercussions, not only on the image of the United States and the West, most definitely Germany as a sovereign country, but also I think that it might trigger a other very inconvenient actions from the countries which are not so willing to
it's very, very simple to both Brian and Edril here. I mean, if these people that perpetrated are willing to lie about this, what else are they lying about? That's the obvious line of logical reasoning people are going to have. And then there would be a whole reassessment of why there's this proxy war against Russia in Ukraine of all places here. That's why they can't, like, you know, the people that did this, they won't even answer questions. They won't even put themselves in a position of being asked a question. That's how bad it's gotten. And that gives it away. That gives away the game. Everyone knows, oh, if they won't answer questions about it, then, well, I guess we know who did it. Anyway, I just wanted to start the program on that. Obviously, we're going to be following this. You know why? Because most of the world wants to know why, okay? All right, Brian, it's changing gears a little bit here. I mean, I'm very worried at this stage of the conflict here because Ukraine is essentially a spent force. Their propaganda efforts in the West are sputtering. There are too many questions arising about capacity with ammunition, with men. And then you have this very weird mixture of Crimea. You know, if you take Crimea back, then we can have negotiations. And then the U.S. says, well, no, that's probably not going to happen, at least not this year, not next year here. I mean, this seemed like a roulette wheel to me. I mean, they're looking for their lucky number to try to move forward. But there is no lucky number. This is a dead end for the West. They're not going to win there. And how they get out of it is anyone's question right now. And what I worry about is a false flag and things like that, because that's the only thing that's going to mix things up in a major way. Brian.
Absolutely. And you just asked, what else will they lie about? Well, they're lying about the status of this proxy war they're waging in Ukraine against Russia. And you're right, they're absolutely out of everything. And as a matter of fact, they're starting to admit that all across the Western media, albeit in a very incremental way. And it really is clear that this is all an attritional war that Russia was prepared for, that NATO is not. And as we have seen many times in recent history, a desperate West is a very dangerous West. A false flag is one possibility. I think the temptation to either themselves or by picking another proxy, perhaps Poland, create some sort of buffer zone in Western Ukraine and really test that red line that Russia has established. It really is leading toward a very catastrophic direction, and nowhere in sight is any talk of peace.
Yeah, Adria, I'm glad that Brian brought that up. Having a third party enter the conflict on the ground, Poland or a group of a coalition of the willing, as they like to call it here, that would be absolutely disastrous. Because I could guarantee you what the Russian reaction would be. Go ahead, Adria.
I mean, I agree with you guys. I mean, it's very worrying that even the people are starting entertaining such constructs as peacekeepers, sending peacekeepers. I mean, who will be involved in these peacekeeping missions? Obviously, the troops which are part of the NATO member states. So they're trying to work around a way how to personally involve NATO without calling it a personal involvement, although everyone knows that the mercenaries and the logistic guys are already there on the ground and helping them. I mean, it's outrageous. But we have to understand that it is not a proxy war only between the West and Russia. But what is here at stake? It is not here at stake what popular Western media is saying, that it is, you know, war between democracy and autocracy. It is a world reordering battle because the unipolar moment is already gone. And the West and the United States know this very well. So they're trying to somehow drive a wedge between Russia and China. Now, we know that tomorrow, Mr. Emmanuel Macron is traveling to China. Before, we had the Prime Minister of Spain going to China. And also Ursula von der Leyen will be trying to persuade Xi Jinping to somehow side with the West, and at the same time to meet with Zelensky. But what is the purpose for Mr. Xi Jinping to talk to Zelensky if the Zelensky, sorry to say it, but honestly, he's a puppet. I mean, he's being, you know, ridiculously pumped with money and the weaponry from the West. Without the West and the money from the United States, this country would be a failed state, which is de facto already a failed state.
Well, I agree with you.
So what is the purpose of having a conversation with someone who is being sponsored? If someone is being sponsored, you're talking to the sponsor, not to the person who is being sponsored. That's my logic behind my thinking.
Well, I'm sure the Chinese are very well aware of that. Okay. Brian, they brought up the term peace team. What pieces are to be kept in Ukraine? See, this is this Orwellian language they like to play on us all the time. No, it will only add to the conflict, and it will escalate the conflict, and no one knows where that could end if there was a direct or quasi-NATO intervention with troops. That would be utterly catastrophe. Go ahead, Brian.
It would, and it all depends on Russia. And the U.S. proxy war against Russia and Ukraine and the conflict that the United States is trying to engineer with China has been entirely up to both Moscow and Beijing to act in a mature and rational way to try to redirect world affairs away from a direct confrontation with the West. The West, just as what was just said about the unipolar moments being over, they're still desperately trying to reassert it. And as the window of opportunity closes, they become more and more desperate in their thinking and in their actions. Think about how dangerous the U.S. invasion and occupation of eastern Syria was. And U.S. troops, working past Russian troops, and how many close calls there were already there. And now everything in Ukraine is, the stakes are so much higher.
And that's exactly what we're going to talk about when we return from our break. Gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue with discussion on the conflict in Ukraine. Let's stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the conflict in Ukraine. All right, now we're joined by Arnaud Devoulet in Moscow. He is a political consultant. Arnaud, before we went to the break, we were talking about the end of the unipolar moment and how that makes the world a very, very dangerous place. Arnaud, everyone knows the hegemon does not give up easily, and they will fight into a corner and take as much down around them as necessary. And this is what we're seeing right now. We started out the program talking about how the Nord Stream pipeline destruction is a story that won't go away. And we see this all through the global south, well, people having questions about the motives of Western powers and their onslaught against Russia. And we should all point out, as was mentioned in the first part of the program, China is involved in this here. And the message I think the Chinese take is, look, the Russians are taking on the entire collective Western world, and they're still standing. And that is something the global south, China, India, and other countries are observing here. And that's what makes this situation, this time in this conflict, so dangerous. Go ahead, Arnaud, in Moscow.
Well, Peter, you summed it all well. The 500-year hegemony of the West is coming to an end, and every time the West attempt to somewhat delay the inevitable, it seems that they get caught up in this quicksand phenomenon, and they are in panic, sheer panic. And we see basically that the emperor has no clothes. So we basically hope for rational actors to be able to emerge out of this mess. But obviously, the U.S. foreign policy is driven by ideological concerns. And this is where the danger lies, if you ask me. We've had people like Victoria Nuland and all of its fellow travelers are essentially administrating the Ukraine file for quite some years now, and they are banking everything on doubling down on the situation. And this is where it gets dangerous now, because obviously the ship is leaking from everywhere. Africa is taking stock of its own opportunities within the Ukraine fulcrum. China is standing pat, and as you underlined it, learning you know, that pretty much NATO is a paper tiger. And so we have this kind of surreal sensation that, you know, we could all get around a table and discuss things bearing on security concerns for Russia, and slowly but surely paving the road for a multipolar world. Unfortunately, the people right now who draft craft U.S. foreign policies are hell-bent on making sure that the unipolar remains. But in doing so, they completely dismiss reality, whether it's on the ground, whether it's economically, whether it's about the soft power, which not that long ago, when we think about it, used to define the West. The West is increasingly being left out as, you know, an observer, a passive observer of its own demise.
Well, Brian, Arnaud is absolutely right. The first part of his answer is absolutely spot on, is that the West is fighting an ideological conflict. The rest of the world is thinking about sovereignty, prosperity, even international law. And that's what's making this so asymmetrical. And that's why the messaging in the media can confuse, quote unquote, the masses in the West, because they're being fed a pack of lies. I mean, democracy versus autocracy, come on. I mean, this is such a ridiculous binary. Okay, a lot of countries are democracies and have wonderful relationships with Beijing. That's not the quotient that is in play here, but that is what Western audiences are being fed. And what, God forbid, quote unquote, democracy fails. See, when you set it up this way, you're setting yourself up for failure. Go ahead, Brian.
Absolutely. And when you read the Western media, they talk about an isolated Russia finding support in places like Asia, Africa, and South America, which is pretty much the entire planet, isn't it? Except for the U.S. and Europe. And they have this idea that they're isolating Russia or isolating China, but in reality, they're isolating themselves. And it is because of this irrational, desperate necessity to reassert unipolarism, which was irrational to begin with. And each day that goes by, it becomes more irrational. And these are people that are in power right now who lack the skill sets to actually invest inward in their own societies and create a constructive role for their nations within multipolarism. So unfortunately, it's going to be up to nations like China and Russia to create the conditions on the ground that make this physically impossible for them to continue on with these conflicts and this subversion that we see them sowing everywhere around the globe.
It's so brilliant what you said about the internal problems of these countries here. Adriel, it is really quite interesting. This is the same group of people that in the United States are going after Donald Trump still again. I don't care if you like or dislike Donald Trump. It's not important here. But they're going after him. They're going after his supporters, okay? This mindset in this foreign policy mindset, it is annihilation of the enemy. There is no tolerance. It's all kind of a moral hygiene issue with them. We see it in foreign policy, we see it in domestic policy in the West, particularly the United States. Go ahead, in London.
Yes, that's very true. And we have to bear in mind that not few days ago, there was a summit for democracy organized by the United States, and many countries were not willing to, you know, to sign up on this. I mean, the final communique was not signed by, among many other countries, by Brazil and Mexico. And it's quite astonishing, because by myself, I mean, my father is from East Africa, he's from Tanzania, and I'm quite familiar with the voices on the ground in Africa, which are not interested in any war which is taking place on the European continent. Last month, in March, I was in India for 1 month, and I had many conversations with my contemporaries and people who are involved in politics and also international affairs, who are saying that you know, this is not very convincing that the West is trying to push people to, you know, be on board with them, because the multipolar world is much more convincing, and it's giving much more opportunities to the people who were on the, you know, receiving end of the liberal international order. And we know how this liberal international order looks like, especially as we discussed at the very beginning of this show, when it comes to Nord Stream pipelines. So the former world is neo-colonial world. People who didn't have any say in the past now have the forum in Russia and in China where they can express their legitimate concerns without being, you know, bribed or killed or the. And have an equal the platform where they can, you know, participate with the countries on the equal footing. So I think that the European Union or the collective West doesn't understand their reality, and they will emerge as a loser of the multipolar world. I'm not sure how they are going to come up with the new ideas, be more creative, and how they are going to manage to live with other people and coexist in the world. But I think that in a Gramscian way, I think that before the new world order will emerge, something very bad would happen, as many people are saying. And this is my greatest concern, that before we will see the light in the tunnel, the darkness will fall.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, with these people in power, the lights at the end of the tunnel is another train coming at you, okay? That's where we are right now. Arnaud, let me... I didn't think that the democracy summit was going to be brought up because it was so frivolous, but it is an interesting point here, because the Western definition, this neoliberal definition of democracy, is actually a cudgel to maintain hegemony. This is a discursive trick that they're playing on all of us here, is that if you're not for democracy, that means you're against us. That means you're for autocracy, which is, again, a ridiculous binary. Nobody in the world really thinks that way, not even these mandarins in power in London, Brussels, and Washington. Go ahead, here in Moscow.
Yeah, I think you pretty much summed it all up. We're dealing with almost like two ships passing by each other in the heart of the night.
Yeah, but Arnaud, only one is shooting at the other. Okay, that's the difference. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Indeed. But again, like I said, you know, with the neocon, someone was wont to say that they do not have reverse gears.
That's
those
right.
People are basically hell bent on. Implementing their vision, you know, this goes way back. You know, we warn more our listeners with the PNAC documents. But when one recalls the Iraqi sequence, all those people were promoted. They were never called into account. And when the WMD report, the Dulfer report in April 2004 came out, and it was pretty much made official that the original excuse or pretext for this illegal invasion was completely debunked, they pretty much almost laughed at us. And so, you know, they might have been on the wilderness for a few years, but they somehow managed to latch onto the Democratic Party and establish new alliances with the liberal interventionists. And they occupy now the entire spectrum of UN's foreign policy.
Yep.
And so, in a way, this is pretty much a situation where we are all on this runaway train. They are occupying the cockpit. They've bolted the doors from within. And we just can't seem to get them out and reassert control over the freight train. So I would echo what the last speaker said. You know, unfortunately, I think, you know, I wish I was wrong on this, but to the extent the multipolar world is arising, and it's a long-term heavy trend. we might still have an accident, and this is what.
Well, I think that's really the essence of this program. We all agree that there's a major shift, paradigm shift going on here. Can we get through it without destroying the world? That's the big question here. But there's a lot of people in power that will not tolerate a change in the status quo, and that's what makes it very dangerous. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Bangkok, London, and here in Moscow. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.